Now entering Nerdist.com.
Big Pop Fun.
Welcome to another episode of Big Pop Fun with Tom Wilson, the westernmost podcast in the USA. If you don't count podcasts made in Woodland Hills, Calabasas, or Malibu, because after that, it's just ocean. Here's Tom.
Hello, everybody. Hey, it's the Big Pop Fun Podcast, and I'm Tom Wilson. I know, I'm as shocked as you are. My jaw is on the floor. I'm the invisible podcast. I'm the podcaster that actually doesn't, host many podcasts for the past 2 months, but I'm back. Aren't we happy about that? Well, I certainly am, and thank you. Thank both of you for your very nice emails asking if I was okay. I'm okay now. I'll talk about that later. I've talked about it before. I had surgery. I've been recovering. It was a recovery that was difficult, but that has come along wonderfully and miraculously. So I'm thankful for that, and I'm thankful to have you, and I'm thankful to be. It's Thanksgiving and it's a new year. Happy New Year. I hope your new year is great. Welcome back to another magical sleigh ride of enchantment and wonder as we let go of the reins, as we just let go of the as I guess I have, huh? Early 2014 with the podcast or whatever, we let go of the reins. We let go of the tight grip, trying to lead our horses this way or that, and we just sit for a minute and realize how little our desperate steering has meant. We, you know, the sleigh ride continues, and we can decide that it's magical or enchanting, and we can decide that it's horrible and difficult. But let's have a magical and enchanting sleigh ride, and enjoy it. Let's take in the view, without worrying so much about the steering. The sleigh will go where the sleigh is going to go. And if we work hard and we pay attention to things, it's probably going to keep leading us in a good direction. So let's just let go of the reins, huh? What a magical and enchanting sleigh ride. The podcast is brought to you by my book, as it always is, The Masked Man, by Tom Wilson, available on, iPad, Kindle, Nook, all that sort of thing. So check that out. The audiobook is coming. It's actually going to be on audible.com very soon. Boy, that, for a non-technical person like me, and like I have found it a challenge. I found it challenging to make an audiobook, but hey, James Arnold Taylor produced the audiobook, put it together. I recorded it in his studio. It sounds great. I'm very pleased with it, proud of it. It is 65,000 hours of me telling a story that I think is worth telling and that people have enjoyed hearing. And that's a good thing. It's also the podcast, is brought to you by art. Support artists wherever you are in this economy where artists are having a hard in this economy. I think we should all change that, okay? We've been saying that for 6 years, 7? I don't know, in this economy. I don't think we should say in this economy anymore. I think we should just start saying, you know, the way things are now and will be in the future. But support artists wherever they are. Support actors and musicians and dancers and writers and jewelry makers, any kind of people, even yourself. Support yourself if you're an artist by enjoying what you're doing and investing time in something that feeds your spirit, huh? In making something, creating something. And so just support each other. That's as they would say in Philadelphia, all I'm trying to say is support artists, buy something, do something, go to a show, and have fun. And don't take care of the kid artists, too. those kids who are creating things and making things and making their videos and everything, try to help them. I mean, so many, well, you know, the artistic kid, it's, you're artistic and you're allowed to do whatever you want. People support you and support you and support you until everyone pretty much as a unit says, all right, time to, you know, stop that stuff and start doing, you know, geometry and history homework, because history is important. If we if we don't study history, we're doomed to repeat it. Oh, boy. Anyway, yes, kids, by all means, put down your creativity and just memorize facts about the different ways that people have killed each other for the past thousands of years. Anyway, wow, that was a tangent. Support artists. That's what I try to say. Support the arts by buying art and support the kids. People always come up to me very often. Oh, my son, he's, and he likes to be in shows and everything. Okay, don't support just kids wanting to be famous, all right? Yeah, because I don't even, I roll my eyes at that too. So I do ask the parent, well, does he love it? Does he do it all the time, or does he want to be famous because that's what TV told him to want? So, I don't know. Support the arts. Sorry. I was talking to my mom on the phone the other day. New Year's, and everything was, and mom was waxing poetic, as mom often does, and that's welcome with me. She's great at that. She says, you know, I've been thinking about it. And I love three things. I said, well, that's great, Mom. Three. I mean, I know you love more than that, but she's, no, I've been thinking about three things. She says, I love dogs, just how they are. I love looking at them, and they're just beautiful animals. I love dogs. That's great, Mom. She says, I love babies. I would have a baby right now if I could. I mean, I just love them and their faces and their laughter and their eyes. And I love babies. Well, that's terrific, Mom. What's the third? She says, I love a two-wheeled bike. Oh, I loved riding them and looking at them. It's so shiny and everything. And I thought, oh, that's where I got it. The bike thing. I mean, you know, I hate dogs and kids, but I love... No, I don't. I love dogs. I love kids. I went out and had four of them. Four kids. I've had, I don't know, three or four dogs. Well, not when I was a kid. I had a lot of dogs, but three or four dogs as an adult. But I love bikes. It's weird. I just... it's post-surgery, as I told you, and I'm getting out. It's been good. It's reduced my pain level remarkably, which is, pardon me, which is very, I can't tell you the joy that it's given me to be able to get up in the morning and walk on the bike. There's a bike path and a pedestrian path. That's near our house. It's pretty, you know, I live in a pretty urban setting, so it's not, but you know, it's nice. It's got trees along it. It's good. And I walk along it with these. So it's got, it's a multi-use. So it's got the bike path section of it that's clearly marked with a painted bike thing and says bike path. And then it has this line. And then it's the pedestrian side of it where it says peds, peds Xing. It's got street signs that... that show you that, you know, bikes on this side, pedestrians on that side with the walking guy, right? And they're on the other side of the bike. But I tell you, if there was one bike and one pedestrian on that thing, somehow they'll get in each other's way. And I don't know how it is. It's a weird human nature thing where if you are 100 yards away from an oncoming bike and you're saying, well, where's that guy going? And, well, he should go the bike pathway and he's staying in the pedestrian way. And then you're sort of easing into the bike path lane because, oh, I guess he wants to use the pedestrian way, which is wrong, but whatever. And then he, right at the end, he veers into the bike pathway and then gives you the look like, hey, man, it's a bike path. And you're like, you were just in the pedestrian way. Anyway, man, I smashed into a guy in New York City many years ago. Central Park, bike path. Oh, my goodness. Well, you know what I think? When you come up to the person, you're supposed to, I think, right? You make the first kind of move like to the right. Because that's how we do it in America. I mean, if you're listening from England, I guess it's to the left because you drive wrong there. But we, you know, drive right. And you move to the right thinking, well, I'll just assume if he goes to the right and I go to the right, we'll be good. But, yeah, I was steaming, man. I'm not mad. I mean, I was booking. And this guy was coming fast. And we get, you know, we're about 20 yards away from each other, going fast, and I make the move to the right, right? He makes the move to his left. Maybe he was a British bicyclist, I don't know, but he makes the first move to the left, and then we're going fast, so I make the counter move, he makes a counter move, and it's like, whoop, got blam! Oh, my goodness. That was a crash. That was not a bicycle incident. That was a crash. And sometimes being big really comes in handy because I fell over and was okay. And the little dude in Lycra went flying. I hope he's okay by now. Yes, he went flying. He landed, I believe, somewhere near the Plaza Hotel. I'm not sure, but he flew a long, long way and skidded and stuff. And he was, I'm sure he remembers the incident as well. And I wish him well, little tiny Lycra clad anonymous bicyclist in Central Park who didn't know which direction to take. But I walk on the bike path in the morning at my house here, and I can't help but look at every bike that passes me. I mean, of course, the guys with the super duper, everything in Lycra with the ridiculous jerseys with the advertising all over them. I don't really understand that, but the guys, they have their outfit. And I know they've got the shoes and the clips things with the pedals, and they've got their equipment, and they like to go fast, and they go by. I don't really pay attention to their bikes because those are those guys who spend, I don't know, an inordinate amount of money, let's say, on bikes and self-regard. So I don't care. But the other bikes I like the junker bikes that some old dude is riding with a dog in the basket. I like, you know, the 10 speeds from the 70s. I just like looking at bikes. They're so shiny, so many different colors. I mean, I learned to ride a bike on the street. I've been an urban cyclist for a long, long time now. I was like 5 years old, got a little bike. Oh, it was shiny. It was red and black with sort of, you know, chrome accents, which were actually in the 60s. That was actually some sharp piece of steel that was jutting from the bike frame. But it was a red, black bike. It was all unbelievable. So I learned to ride a bike on 64th Street in Philadelphia, which went fine for about 20 seconds until someone yelled car. And then you had to get out of the way. So my learning to ride a bike was basically, okay, then you pedal, put your feet on the pedal, Tommy, and now pedal, spit car, okay, and then go to the side of the road, and then wait for the car to be, okay, let's get out there, pedal your feet, spit car. So I learned on 64th Street and on the sidewalk, so avoiding trash cans and people walking their dogs and stuff like that, and you know, 64 whatever Buick Electras sitting in people's driveways that you had to get around. But I was, I could ride the street when I was 5 or 6. I could cross the street. If you look both ways, I could cross the street. I could do, man. And that was in inner city Philadelphia. And, you know, in my day, you could ride a bicycle in this, not like the kids today. Oh, forget it. Okay. But, so that bike was, of course, being an urban cyclist, it was stolen from behind my house. Yeah, no 5-year-old steals the bike of a 5-year-old. It had to be an adult, right? Some guys, it was parked like behind our house. And back then, we didn't have you know, you didn't lock a bike like you do now. We didn't have kryptonite locks. Sorry, kryptonite was just something that you know, hurt Superman. And Superman was a good Superman, George Reeves, not this, you know, Nicolas Cage or Keanu Reeves or I don't know, whoever's playing Superman now, I don't pay attention. But you know, that was kryptonite, not the kryptonite lock, the U-lock with the black. We didn't have that. So the bike was sitting behind my house, and I guess some adult or teenager dude just came up behind our house and stole my bike when I was a little kid. Then I've talked about it before on the podcast. I had a silver Stingray. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, silver. It was like chrome colored. Banana seat, flames, three speeds. In the grip shift thing, in the gripper. Three shift, click, click, click. Three speed. With a three speed bike, you could basically, you know, ride forever. You could, with a three speed, you could ascend Mount Everest. There is nothing you couldn't do with a three-speed, especially if it had like a shifter in the grip like a motorcycle. And of course, I loved that bike. I rode it everywhere until a gang of kids came and beat me up, threw me off the bike and stole it. I'll count. At the end of this, I'm going to count and see what the score is between Bicycle Thieves and Tom. But then I got a red three-speed. My parents didn't have a lot of money, so I got one of those three speeds that was one of those heavy steel frame bikes with the fenders and everything. With big fenders and reflectors and all kinds of stuff, like a big old style three speed bike. But my great parents, who wanted it to seem like a 10 speed, they had the bike shop change the handlebars from those upright three speedy, you know, old lady handlebars into the downturned racing handlebars. They haven't put white handlebar tape on the handlebars. And the big three-speed clicker connected to the top of the handlebar that I could do. So I was riding, you know, a fendered heavy steel three-speed bike with racing handlebars. But of course, I mean, I cared early on, but then I didn't care after. But when you have a three-speed, and then it was a world of 10-speeds, then everyone looks askance at your bike. Oh, three-speeds. Oh, what is that? What is that? You got a bike from 1954 or something? And I'm like, hey, three-speeds, man. I could, you know, I could ascend Mount Everest with this thing. I could ride. It's three-speeds. Click, click, click. Third speed. Mr., you know, fancy 10-speed that your dad bought for you. Well, big whoop. So anyway, I went off and that bike, you know, I outgrew that bike. And then I just borrowed a lot of bikes. I borrowed people's bikes left and right. I mean, I borrowed a million bikes to go a million things. Then I finally moved out to California. I bought a Peugeot. Yeah. 12 speeds, not 10, 12 speeds. That was a great bike, and I was an early kind of bike commuter. I rode everywhere on that bike. I rode to auditions. I rode to meetings in Hollywood. I rode everywhere. In fact, I won't look. It's another Sam Kinison mention, and I don't want to over mention Sam. God rest his soul, because eventually, as I've recounted in this podcast, we didn't really get along. We had very different lifestyles, but he came up to me at one point and said, said, boy, you're riding that bike a lot, huh? Hey, yeah, you're getting in shape, huh? What do you do? I said, yeah, I ride it to everywhere. I ride it to auditions. I ride it to meetings and everything. And he said, aren't you afraid you'll be sweaty? And I just thought, man, if there's one person on earth who, it's just ironic, would be worried about my being sweaty, it's Sam Kinison, a guy wearing like a wool beret and a full trench coat in July. But but anyway, that bike, I rode it everywhere, and I had my girlfriend at the time lived in Santa Monica near the beach, and I rode it from Hollywood to Santa Monica all the time. That bike got stolen. Yeah, that bike was stolen. It was locked, got stolen. And then I got another Peugeot after that. That was nice. But I gave that. Was not stolen. I gave that bike away because I knew a guy who was having a rough time. And boy, I still miss that bike. But he needed something. He needed transportation. Didn't have a car. It's L.A. He's having a rough time. And I'm like, well, hey man, take a bike. Get around for yourself. And then I didn't I don't think I ever saw him again after that. So I don't know. I don't know what happened with that. But that okay. Enough bikes. I bought mountain bike. I think I've owned 3 mountain bikes. 2 go to thieves, 1 stays with me. Yeah, the first one I was locked up to like a 6 or 8 inch by 8 inch wooden post. I mean thick. I mean thick wooden post locked. Thief dude saws through the wooden post, takes the locked bike to go and take, I don't know, put it on a welding mask and some special saw and saw off the lock and have it. So that bike was gone. Oh man, then I got a specialized stump jumper. Oh, nice bike. I rode that everywhere. I brought it up filming movies on location. I brought it to On Location. I was riding it all over the place. And finally, I brought it home to L.A. where it got stolen out of my garage. Yeah, they went up this hill and everything, opened the garage door, and stole the bike out of the garage. But then I got, so I think, what is that, 5 bikes? So 5, 2... All right, so final score. Well, it's not final score because I'm locking my bike with, you know, I basically stay near the bike at all times and have 17 locks that I put on the bike. But Bike Thieves 5, Tom 2. But my final bike, the bike I have now, hey, vintage 1991 Specialized Team Stump Jumper. Oh, what a bike! If we were in a time machine and living in the early 90s, because it was very cool then. But I still have it. And it was collecting dust because, because of my legs. Those darn legs of mine that wouldn't go in circles or go forward without a lot of pain. I rode the bike as long as I possibly could, until it was time to put it away, which was a very sad day to me. And even, and looking at it gathering dust, it made me sad a lot. I almost gave the bike away or left it on the street a couple of times because I would look at it and think, well, I'm just, I'm shot, man. I'm not riding a bike again. But I did. After my surgery, yeah, the surgeon, friend of mine, over at USC. I've got one leg operated on by UCLA, one leg operated on by USC. So I have a warring faction. We'll see every year on the gridiron, we see which one of my hips will win and get bragging rights. But my surgeon's a great guy. And he has suggested that I stop doing a lot of things that I was doing. He suggested that it's not the best idea to go out in the ocean and surf, or to bring my kayak that I was going for it there for a while. I was kayaking out into the ocean. He said, I'm not sure about that. So I've stopped a lot of things. So after this surgery, I looked like Cindy Lou Who with my big eyes and said, do you think I could try to ride a bike? And I was really expecting him to do that face. I don't. And, and then I'd be like, okay, I guess not. And he said, yeah, I don't see a problem with that. I mean, you've ridden bikes before. You know how, right? Yeah, I know how. Yeah. I think with the range of motion now, and, I think you could definitely do it. I was thrilled. Oh, my gosh. I thrilled. I hadn't ridden the bike in years. Went home, dusted it off, took it to the shop. Had it tuned up, tires filled up, everything taken care of. And my street is this little gentle hill. So I walk the bike out. My wife's watching because she's worried. Honestly, I was worried because I didn't know if my feet would really kind of spin around with the pedals or what would happen. So I walk the bike gingerly up my street, 20 yards, turn it around, get on the bike, and just roll towards my house. At 0.00001 mile per hour, it was like I was flying. It was the most incredible feeling. I don't know what it is about bike riding. Is it the air in your face? Is it the sense of balance that something happens to your brain? I don't know. But my gosh, I was like, oh. I mean, really, it was almost embarrassing. I put my feet on the pedals. I started pedaling around, you know, moving them around slowly. I could pedal. My legs felt okay. Maybe this will work out. I was so happy. And so the next day, next couple days, there's a worker out front of our house working. I've known the guy for years. I come out with the bike. I'm going to take my bike ride. He looks at my, well, Tom, admiringly at me, you know, oh, you just off your surgery. You were just on crutches a couple, now you're going out. Well, good for you, buddy. And of course, being an idiot, I'm just, well, you know, you got to move it or lose it. That's what I say. You got to get out there. Am I right? Out there where the air is clean and the bicycles are rolling. That's where I'll be. So, I'm doing that stupid, you know, whatever macho posing thing. You can't keep me down. I eat crutches. So he's like, well, boy, I admired. Great way to go. I get on the bike. And I start riding down my street. And this is easy, flat, nicely paved riding. In 4 minutes, my legs feel like they're going to fall off. My muscles have been my quadriceps, my hamstrings. I mean, I've been stretching them and doing all that stuff, but they're just bike riding. They were out of practice. So 4 minutes, I am toast. And I'm thinking, oh, all right, well, I can't do it much longer. And I go about 6 minutes. And my legs just have to stop. But the worker guy's still at my house. I can't just ride my bike up to my driveway after 6 minutes. I go, well, that was it. You know, and the guy goes, oh, well, that's, you know, and just like, oh, that's okay, Tom. You know, hey, maybe next time you work. No, I didn't want to be that guy. I just did the whole, well, you move it or lose it. You know, I'm macho. I'm going to bite off a big chunk of bike-phology. So I go about a block away from I went about a block away from my house, and I kind of hide behind this tree because I'm thinking, well, what if he comes out and looks down the street toward me and I'm just standing here? What am I going to do? Then I have to return and do the whole, like, you know, well, I'll try again some other time. And he could ask, like, well, why were you standing in the street just staring back here? And I go, I don't know, really. I was just collecting my thoughts. So I'm kind of hiding behind this tree and waiting. But the guy, I don't know if he was on the phone, making a phone call or something. He just wasn't leaving. So I wait behind the tree for about 20 minutes. And then I think, well, okay, I've been gone for about 25 minutes now. Now will be a reasonable time for an early bike ride. So I get back on the bike. I ride down the street, zip into the driveway. Oh, yeah, that's a good stretch of the legs. He's like, oh, good for you. Yeah, that's what I say. God, yeah, you go. You got to go after it. Am I right? You got to go after it. No, they can't keep me down. But most of my first ride was spent just hiding behind a tree and of trying to avoid humiliation. But it's getting a little better, and I'm riding the bike a lot, and I'm just thrilled with it. And maybe that's why I've been, you know, late with the podcasts and late with things and a little dreamy-eyed because I'm just looking at trees and looking at the sky and taking a bike ride and approaching this new year with, you know, there's plenty of work to do. But if I have a chance in my life and a bike is standing there, I'm just getting on it. Yeah. How about you? Do you have a bike? Do you have a bike, Dusty, in your garage? I mean, I'm not. Believe me, I know. Believe me. Trust me. My bike was dustier than yours, rustier than yours, and my legs are, you know, compared to yours, nah. But if you can, if it's just sitting there, and you know, have a couple hours on Saturday, hey, fill up the tires and go. And I know it's winter, but boy, wouldn't that be cool? Just you have one of those old mountain bikes, just put some knobby tires on there and just go somewhere and just breathe air and be too cold for a while. I know I live in California. Easy for me to say, but I kind of wish I was back there. Put big knobby tires with like spikes on it and just go down some snow hill and have all the kids going, "We're sledding! Get away from here, old man!" And I'm like, "Yes!" Anyway, that's my bike story for today. Thanks for being here. Final score: Bike Thieves 5, Tom 2. But those two have been worth the whole thing. Well, thanks for listening today. Thank you to everything. Hey, thanks for the people that designed the bike path through the San Fernando Valley of Los Angeles. Thank you for the wonderful designers of the 1991 Specialized Team Stump Jumper. Thanks to Chris, Katie, everybody at Nerdist Industries. Thanks to Emily Wilson for helping me with the production. Thank you to McPherson Guitars for helping me out on the live show. I'm coming out there. It's a warning. Come and see me. Please say hi. Please say you listen to the podcast. Thank you. Consider subscribing to the podcast, and we will see you next time. I'll be riding.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.